Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on this Saturday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Glad to have you along. You may recognize Lauren Groff's name from her two best-selling novels, The Monsters of Templeton and Arcadia, but you will be hearing more of her name with her new novel, Fates and Furies. NPR listeners will recognize it as the latest pick for the NPR Book Club. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to the Book Club at 91.7 Lauren Groff, the day before she shows up here in Cincinnati for signing at Joseph Beth Booksellers. Lauren, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be on the show.
I have to ask about all the attention you're getting, Lauren. Okay, the NPR Book Club, that's a pretty bright spotlight right there going across the nation. But I've started reading some of the bookseller quotes and they just gush. I have to say, after reading the book, I need to gush with them. Fates and Furies is just incredible. Where did your story come from?
Are delightful. Thank you. So this story is actually, it has very deep roots in my own ambivalence about marriage, which I am married, and so it seems a little odd that I'm ambivalent about it, but I am very happily married. It's the best decision I ever made. The institution, however, has some pretty enormous problems. I try to find novels to write that come out of a place of just deep ambivalence or mystery in me. All of the books that I've written so far have been something that have suggested themselves to me as really rich things to look at deeper. Because, you know, when you sign up to write a novel, you're signing up to write it for 4 or 5 years, and it has to be something that really puzzles you. So I went into it knowing that I was going to write about a husband and a wife, and I was going to write in two distinct perspectives, his perspective and then hers. But I didn't know quite how to do it. And I also started it in the middle of writing my last book, Arcadia. And I do that primarily because it's so frightening to embark on writing something without knowing whether or not it's going to succeed. So if you embark on writing two things without knowing either of them will succeed, it's actually, you know, you're hedging your bets a little bit, I think. So what I did was, whenever I came up to a point in Arcadia, which I had to think about deeply before, you know, really sitting down and working, I would get up and I would think about Fates and Furies, and I would I had these huge pieces of butcher paper on either wall, and I would write Lotto's perspective, scenes in Lotto's point of view, and then immediately turn around and write Mathilde's. He's the husband and she's the wife. And so that way I built the idea of the book before I even started sitting down to write it. And my process is really strange. You know, I write longhand. I write multiple drafts without looking at them. And then only after a few years of writing many, many, many drafts do I actually sit down and say, okay, I'm going to work on the sentences. So that's basically where this book came from. And everything else that I was so passionate about over the course of writing this book sort of ended up in the book. So there's a lot of, you know, plays and playwriting and operas and Greek mythology and all sorts of things that just sort of found their way into the book.
I was going to ask you about the ambivalence about marriage, because I always read acknowledgments in books. Well, I pretty much read the book cover to cover before I read anything else. And I was surprised after reading Fates and Furies to see that in your acknowledgment about the ambivalence about marriage. And we won't delve deep in, but I wondered, what is that ambivalence?
Has a lot to do. I took a lot of feminist philosophy classes when I was in college, so it has a lot to do with the institution and the history of marriage, right? I mean, it's been pretty bad to women over the course of millennia. You know, it was designed in order to sell off young women so that they can have babies, basically. Mm. But I also don't love a lot of the residual gender expectations within the institution of marriage. And I'm so delighted that marriage is now open to almost anyone who wants to be married. I mean, I think that's really tremendously lovely and wonderful. But as an institution, it's relatively conservative. And I bridle against some of the assumptions that we take when we when we just assume things about marriage. I mean, I push against that a lot.
Lauren Groff is the author of the new book Fates and Furies, a novel. She will be in town at Joseph Beth Booksellers Rookwood tomorrow at 2 o'clock for a discussion and signing about Fates and Furies. Fates and Furies is the NPR Book Club, the latest pick in the NPR Book Club. And Lauren, as I was reading Fates and Furies, you talk about putting the sentences together. So you plot a lot beforehand. Is that what I'm understanding when you say that? Because when I look at this, just all the little tendrils that run through this story, I loved reading it, but I couldn't imagine trying to keep up and creating it.
Well, it's not just plot, and I do love plot. I'm not one of those literary fiction writers who doesn't like plot. It's sort of the one thing that people say against literary fiction is that there's no plot. I think that it's important, but it's also a matter of understanding the characters. So there will be times when, I will have chosen something foundationally wrong for the book, and it won't be until I've finished a draft that I understand why it's so wrong for the book or for the characters. So the way that I like to describe it is, working on these draft after draft after draft is what I'm doing is sort of three-dimensionally building the story. It's almost as if I'm 3D printing it. I'm doing layer after layer after layer on top of layer. And so then I can actually look at the story almost as a three-dimensional thing, turn it around, walk into the streets, look at the buildings. It's this little world, and I'm able to choose my path through the story that way.
Your reaction to the reaction to Fates and Furies, I mean, even before it came out, it's been talked about. I read it being an indie next pick for October, and had been reading buzz about it for quite some time, and I think recently in the New York Times book section. As an author, having worked on this story, shall we say, in the dark for all those years, what is your reaction, Lauren?
Oh, it's so immensely pleasurable. I mean, I'm not a ubiquitous person in general, but the past few weeks I've been really, really happy. It's just, you just hope that your book will one day find even one reader who gets it, who understands what you're trying to do, and to find as many as I found, it just makes me so happy and delighted. It's exactly what you dream of, as you said, in the dark, in the silence, in the worry that you have to live in for years before a book comes out. So, I'm just so, so grateful. And I have to remember this during the writing of the next book when I am, miserable and, my children come home to find me crying again. I just have to remember how grateful this publication has made me.
I have to ask, as I was reading Fates and Furies, there were times, in the midpoint of the novel, I literally gasped out loud when you shifted or made a shift in the words. And, I found the language to be very affecting. I was sharing with Rick, my producer here, that, you were making my heart pound as I was reading this book. When you write it, are you having that same response?
I am, and I concentrate on the language at the very last few drafts. So I sort of know what the story is, but it's really when I really bear down very, very hard on the book that I start to feel the things within the scenes that I really need to feel. And, if you're writing a funny scene and it doesn't make you laugh, it's not going to make anyone else laugh, right?
If you're writing true.
A really sad scene and it doesn't make you sad, I think that the likelihood of it making other people sad will not be good. So, it's just you really do have to replicate, almost as like method acting, you have to replicate some of the emotions within yourself in order to get it onto the page the right way, I think.
So this is part love story, part, I almost felt like a fable at times as I started to read it, Lauren. The names of the characters, Lotto and Matilda and Antoinette, very, it just for me as a reader evoked legend and, you know, big stories. And this is a really big story. Did you think that naming the characters this were part of the story to build that structure that you were creating?
Yes. And what I was doing in the first part of the book was creating a kind of story that we've seen before. You know, it's the Künstlerroman, which is the story of an artist as he comes to fruition. And it is an archetypal kind of story. And so I wanted to play around with this feeling of other stories sort of impressing themselves upon this story. Because Lotto, the guy, thinks of himself in almost mythological terms. I mean, he's like a Greek hero to his own self, right? Like,
yes.
This is how he thinks of himself. So I wanted that part of the book to be a little bit more elevated in terms of storytelling, meaning it's knowingly metafictional, right? It's knowingly about storytelling. And then I wanted the second part of the book to maybe puncture some of the ways that storytelling happens in the first part of the book. So I built it up in order to knock down certain things.
Wow. Oh, and Lotto, by the way.
It was fun.
Well, and Lotto, short for Lancelot. You do a lot of, well, I also do classical music announcing, so I know all of Wagner's operas, and
there were a
little Wagner in there, a little Arthurian legend. And that was your influence?
Absolutely. Oh my God, I love opera desperately. And it sounds a little odd coming from a woman in her 30s, but I grew up in Cooperstown, New York, and there's Glimmerglass there. And mm-hmm. it's a very small opera house, but it's very powerful, and they put on incredible operas. And so I grew up with opera because my parents lived only a few miles away, and it was, you know, every year for my birthday, that's all I wanted was to get the cheap tickets to the opera. So I've loved it ever since I was a small child. I didn't understand it, but what I love the most about it is that it's so immediate, right? I mean, it's this Gesamtkunstwerk, you know, like the total work of art, the synthesis of art, as Wagner sort of describes it, where there's music and there's light and there's scenery and there's acting and there's singing, you know, all sorts of art are happening. And I think a lot of people think of movies as sort of that synthesis of art. But with movies, they're a little bit different because you are distanced from what's happening by not only the screen, but also by the time, right? Because what's happening with the actors happened months ago, if not years ago. Whereas in the opera, you're sitting in the audience and you look up on stage and it's happening in the moment. I mean, I love that intense, just swim through the moment that's happening with so much emotion and color and range. I mean, I just love it. So, yeah, absolutely. Wagner was a huge influence on this book. And the music in Tristan und Isolde was, you know, on repeat for a number of years.
Well, you really knocked my socks off. I really appreciate the story, Lauren. And thank you very much for your time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Lauren Groff, her new novel is Fates and Furies. She'll be in Cincinnati at the Joseph F. Booksellers Rookwood Pavilion tomorrow at 2 o'clock, Sunday, October 11th at 2 o'clock for a discussion and signing of Fates and Furies. You can learn more about Lauren and her work and the book at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.